Ireland's top hairstylist, a cut above the rest. Today I'm really excited to talk to Dylan Bradshaw, Ireland's most celebrated hairstylist. His first job when he was 12, he started cutting hair when he's 15. He's built up a powerful personal brand at home and abroad. He's really down to earth still. Dylan has won over 60 awards and has worked with top bands like U2, The Corrs. He's worked with many top TV shows in Ireland, in Europe and in the US. I think you're going to enjoy our chat. Enjoy.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Selfmaker Show. This is your host, Conor Lynch. Hi, Dylan. How are you today?
Great. Thanks, Conor. Thanks. I'm very good.
So, really a big fan of you and your work, and I've been researching into your career. I've seen your salon for years there on South William Street. Love your personal branding. And the more I look into you, the more I, you know, see that you have had a really exciting and prestigious career. You've won a lot of awards, etc. Do you want to maybe tell me, go back a little, maybe go back to the start and say back to when you were much younger. How did you see your career developing, or had you any aspirations, or what was it like when you were growing up?
I think when I was growing up, obviously, it was always about, you know, I suppose I wasn't academic, so school really failed for me because I didn't realize at the time that I was dyslexic. I just thought I couldn't get it. So it really was about just finding something that wasn't education based for me, you know, that I wasn't being in school. So I couldn't wait to get out of school, you know. And I think for me, part of the home that I grew up in, it was always like, if you can't make school, you've got to get yourself like a trade. That was always there. Yeah. So that was kind of it. That's how I got into hairdressing. It had nothing to do with like I had these creative, you know, thoughts, or thought it was messing with dolls' hair on the weekends. It was just a job that I accidentally got into, that my mother, you know, got me into, and I really loved it just purely because, or took the job on purely because I got to work with girls. That's it in a nutshell. So there was no like, you know, you kind of go, I think a lot of the stuff you do is you go with your gut, but it's a funny thing. I look back, my mum sent me in to get a haircut in Peter Mark in Dunleary Shopping Centre at the time, and I wasn't aware that I was going for a job interview. I thought I was just getting a haircut with their local hairdresser. And I remember the manager came down to me at the end of the haircut, and he was like going, so I believe you want to get into hairdressing. And I just remember there was that, you know, there was that split second moment where I could have actually gone, I could have said no. Yeah. And, you know, and I said, I'm purely suggest, because I remember I was 15 and I was working in, sorry, I was sitting in the chair getting a haircut. I'm sure all I was doing was just like, the mouth was, the jaw was open, looking at all the girls working in the salon. Because I was a Christian Brothers boy, so you hardly got to see the opposite sex really. And as a teenage boy, it was such a that was the inspiration really to do the job. And it was a part-time job when I was at school, so it was great.
Brilliant. And I read it wasn't even your first job, so I think you were started working maybe by about 12.
Yeah, I worked in a bar when I was 12. I've always worked. My grandfather had a shop fitting company, so even on the summers, I'd go out and I'd just make teas and coffees. I was more of a nuisance, but my dad wasn't around, so he kind of just took me under his wing, and it was like just to, I suppose, give you some pocket money if you like. I worked on the back of a van. I know that sounds a bit skeptical, but over on the Halfpenny Bridge, there's a market there on Sunday mornings. I used to work off the back of that selling junk out of that. I mean, I've had lots of jobs, but I've always had money. I even sold, even when I was in school, I used to sell to the teachers in the staff room. I used to bring up stock from the van and I'd take it for myself so I could sell it on the side. The guy that I worked with was great. He said, yeah, absolutely. So I always was like more interested in there's other ways to do things rather than just, at the time, I probably didn't have the confidence that I was doing, but I mean, I've always had some sort of confidence, but when you keep getting knocked back in school, that's your problem, you know?
Yeah. So you're obviously very entrepreneurial, good drive, hardworking. So once you got into hairdressing then, how did you say, okay, I gotta study and focus in on this area? How did you get good?
I started off in Peter Mark in Dunleary Shopping Center, and the funny thing is I led a kind of a double life at the time. I used to play hurling for Dublin minors and the kind of the under 16s, if you like. So I did that for a period of time. So I led this double life where the coach had to drive me. So I had a bag with two hurls in it, but also a hairdryer and a bag of brushes. But he'd take me from training and drive me to Dunleary Shopping Centre so I could do classes. And that was funny. I did that for 2 years, living that kind of secret life. And it was one of those things where you have to kind of apply yourself. It wasn't natural to me at all, the hairdressing. It was really, really difficult. I was like, you know, I had awkward hands. But then something just clicked. Yeah. My gift always has been the gab. I can relate to people. I get on with people. And that's always been my, I think, kind of foundation, if you like, whatever I do. But getting better at the hairdressing was kind of just a thing that I was working hard at. And then I got the opportunity to go into the city centre, and that kind of changed my life then.
Yes. So you're leading a, that must have been quite an interesting double life. Did you ever get caught with the hairdryer and the hurlies?
No, it was funny. It's like, nearly like I was a cross dresser or something. You think I'd be nearly changing in the corner. No, it's one of those funny things. It's kind of like you got to remember, this is the end of the 80s where, you know, you're like, oh, what, you're a hairdresser? You're totally gay hairdressers. You know, it's all that kind of stereotypical stuff when you were a kid. So it was funny. And also as well, being, you know, from that kind of background, Christian brother, you know, like you're gay men, you're working with gay men. It was amazing, you know, as you got the job, was really nervy or scary at the time, but actually it was brilliant because the great thing about hairdressing is, it's funny, I listen to all this equal opportunity stuff that goes on at the moment, equal wages, you know, sexuality, all that sort of stuff in the workplace. Sure, that's been equal since, you know, the 80s, since I've been doing it. So, and even before that again. So it was a place that you could go if you were different, if you wanted to be, you know, accepted no matter what your skin color was or your, you know, sexuality or whatever. So it was the best place in the world for me because I met so many different types of people that were sitting in the chair and the people that you worked with. So it gives you great confidence, you know, that it's okay to be different. You don't have to be like everybody else.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So it didn't take you too long then. You got your own salon. I think it was quite a young age you set up on your own.
Yeah, I worked in Peter Mark and I went away to work in New York, and then I came back and I worked in Reds for 4 years. And then when I was 27, I opened my own salon down the road from where I am, like a couple hundred yards down the road from where I'm currently situated now in South William Street.
And so maybe what was the thought process in that? Because obviously it's a huge move.
Yeah,
you were confident, you had the client base, you had, you know, enough to get started. So tell me, what were the pros?
Well, actually, you know, I had the client base, but I didn't have a single hairdresser employed. I got Tom DePuer to do the salon, which was kind of a very famous architect at the time who won the Biennale. A very talented guy. I had really struggled with, I was very lucky at the time, I suppose, to explain from a financial purpose. I mean, I would like to say that everything that I've done, it's been out of my own arse pocket, because we came from a fairly, you know, normal background. So I had no support, if you like, in that sense. There was just my mum raising the four of us. So I literally did lots of editorial work and session work, and I started looking after celebrities, and then I started going on tours. So you get a much better wage than you would probably in the normal workplace. Yeah. So I start getting a name for within the industry. But looking after really good kind of clients. But then I also love my clients that come into the salon every day as well. So with that, I kind of said, right, well, the next move for me to do is, I could stay here and do really well and help somebody's business, which is a thing. But for me, I'm the kind of guy that's the pain in the arse, that like, if somebody's doing something, I've got the finger in the air, go, but why can't we do it this way? So I just knew myself the best way to do, you know, instead of it, you know, always complaining or always have an issue or why can't we do something better, is to go and do it yourself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's easy to criticize, but actually to go and do that yourself is the toughest thing in the job. So that's what I wanted to do. So I wanted to do something different. So we opened a salon that was very different. It was minimalist. We had Vogue, Paris and Marie Claire, French Marie Claire came over to shoot the salon, just from a few architectural spaces in Dublin at the time. It was very, very different. And even we did shiatsu massage 20 years ago in phones. You weren't allowed to bring your phone in past the reception and all that stuff, which you wouldn't get away with now. But it was a kind of a pure sense where it's more relaxing environment. And what we did, I think, was very, very different, which was fantastic. And even on Jesus, when you think about how everything happens for you. I mean, I remember on the opening night, sure, the papers the next day were on the front of the national papers, but the Times, myself and the Corps, the girls at the time, they came down to launch the opening night. And, it's that sort of stuff. So it was great. It was a really great kind of way we started the business and went really, really well, or still continues to. But great way to start a business at 27,
Yeah, absolutely. So you're very, very conscious then of the experience. So whether that, that real world experience. So you put a lot of thought into that. So had you been watching?
I spend most of my life dreaming, daydreaming on things, what I'm going to do. I've always had that. That's the creative thing with me. I mean, I know what I want. And even when I work with architects or if I work with, designers in any way, shape or form, I completely respect what they do, but I also have a very clear thought of the product that I want at the end of the day. And so it's a collaboration, but at the end of the day, I do have to have a say. Some people say probably I'm a control freak, but I do, I've got to think about my business for the next 10 years and what it says to people when they come through the doors. And sometimes when you work with creative people, they just want to flex their muscles and do something that's great, but it also has to work, You can have a beautiful space, but it has to have a really multifunctional kind of space and enjoyment for the team and enjoyment for the clients, and works.
Yeah. So it's a lovely space. And you added then an academy. So again, how did that evolve and how does that work?
Well, the academy was just something that I just felt the hairdressing industry was needed to be better in the country. And then I wanted to I found that doing the one-off courses are great, but I actually just thought maybe we'll do a full-time academy where people can come in and become a hairdresser after, 12 months or 18 months that they just enlist and it's a full class of 12. And that's the way we went about it, But the reason we went about that also is that I took on a space that's 10,000 square feet. So I didn't really want people taking other parts of it. I had a landlord that had it broken up. It was a wreck of a building that we brought back to life. And then I was how do I block the rest of the building off rather than sharing with somebody else?
Yeah.
So I was trying to create a business also model that could kind of pay for that. Because it's, if you're talking about on a high street in the city center of 10,000 square feet, it's a lot of money. And, I opened that 11 years ago, which what age am I now? So it was I was 35 when I opened that, 36. So that was a big undertaking as well. The building was a wreck. It was, so I had to put seven figures into it over a period of 3 or 4 years,
Wow. And how is the academy in proportion of
very tough at the moment. I've closed the academy obviously with everything going on, and I don't think I'm going to reopen it, to be honest. There's too many uncertainties down the road, and it will take too much effort. And not only that, it's so difficult the way Dublin has been, even before between COVID, I should say, even before that, the problem was the city centre or Dublin itself was so expensive to live in. The demand was so difficult for people to even find a room to move to Dublin if they were outside of Dublin or rural. It just got to the stage where actually that was the deal breaker for a lot of people. And we found it really tough the last 2 years because it's very, very expensive to try and pay a course that's 12,000 to 15,000 euro and then a year of accommodation that goes with it. So you find a lot of people are kind of going, I don't know if I can deal with it. But even the hassles of trying to get a place in Dublin was tough. So we looked at other ways and options and stuff of we could set up houses and bring people to it, but it's just too much effort. It's just too much manpower for the return that you're in. The love of what you do, but then you have to turn around and go, actually, I love what I do, but I don't want it to be taxing now. I'm happy when you're 27 to open a business to work for nearly free to get it where you need it to be, but not when you're 47. It's a different so you have to I think that's the thing about business as well. You have to know when to call it and say it's not going to work with all these kind of I suppose, all these criteria outside your business that you can't control.
Yeah. Is there anything then that you've been thinking about over the last number of months, like maybe other avenues or other ideas?
Yeah. I'm going to refit the salon out next year. I was hemming and hawing about doing it. Obviously, we were going to do it this year, but then with COVID, you're kind of going, Jesus, like, what is Dublin City going to be like now once we come back? Because the change in the city centre has been like dramatic. And not just that people aren't there, but actually what's people's shopping habits going to be like when this is lifted? Yeah. And then what does next year see? Because nothing's going to just switch back on. It's going to take time. And I really, realistically, I can't see the business become, or I can't see the city centre, I suppose, becoming normalised on at least September of next year, I think definitely the numbers are going to get better and it's going to get more confidence in the place. But like, we're not going to, this thing isn't going to go away overnight, but also there's people's habits have changed as well. Suburbs has become a very popular place at the moment for people compared to the city centre. Now, the advantage we have is half our business travels from 32 counties. But the disadvantage to that at the moment is obviously they come from 32 counties. So yeah, we're going to do a fit out. I have a completely different concept of the salon. I'm not reacting to COVID or to the COVID, but I've always wanted to do something again different. We've had 11 years out of this fit out, if you like, and experience, and I just want to pull it apart now and redo it differently.
Very good. And tell me, so how does the online experience work for you? So promoting your brand online and websites, have you been into marketing yourself online for a long time, or what's happened there?
I'd be almost like a newborn, I suppose, when it comes to social media and that kind of press and stuff that we're doing. And I'm learning slowly. I definitely think we've made it more of a, from a business point of view, it's definitely making more, because you're sitting at home where you can kind of think about things to do. I think the problem for me is if you want to put effort into social media and make it exciting, you have to really allocate a lot of time to do it. And I don't have a lot of time because I'm quite busy, but it is something we've reflected on and looked at and said, you know, I'm going to take a day off looking after clients so I can just, you know, record content and put up stuff, and just to make sure that the stuff that we're doing represents the business that we do. I have a love-hate relationship with social media and the stuff. I think, you know, 99% of the stuff is just copied, pasted, and the same old jargon that gets put up there, you know. So I do think if we're going to do something, I'd like to think about trying to do something a little bit different and thinking from another angle rather than I suppose the angle that everybody else does.
Very good. So your logo, obviously, I really like your personal brand. Can you maybe tell me about that? Because I think that's very early stage personal brand. You know, you got into it early and it's very strong. Why don't you maybe describe the logo to people?
I mean, I think logo and your, you know, brand, it's very funny when you open a business first and people start talking about your brand and you're like so paranoid or conscious going, brand, what's that mean? Like, I mean, does that make you sound like I'm big headed or, you know, whatever? Yeah. And that was the same about my name, Dylan Bradshaw's the business. And it's a funny story. I was flying, I was on a flight with the chorus going from one gig to another on a private jet. There was only eight of us on the flight. And John Hughes is their manager. He was asking, you know, we were away for 3 months, and he said, so what are you doing now when you get off the flight? Or what are you doing for the 2 weeks off? And I said, actually, I'm going to go look at a salon, the potential to a salon. And he said, oh, very good. And he says, talk to me about it, because that's the way his mind works. He likes to hear everything that's going on. So I was like saying, I said, look, it's, you know, this is a dream of mine for a long time, and I've wanted to do a salon. He says, and what are you going to call it? And I said, I think it was something like The Room or something. He goes, oh, Jesus, that's the load of shit. He goes, I said, what? Oh, what? What would you call it The Room for? I was like, what? This is amazing. It's, you know. He says, look at those gobshites there sitting. And we were all sitting. It's kind of like being on a bus, right? You're all talking to each other. And he goes, he was saying to Andre, what was the name you guys wanted to call yourselves before I met you? And I think there was something like, it was just the most disgusting, jokey name you've ever heard. I can't even remember what it is, and it'll come to me in a second. But he said to me, but I told them to call themselves their name, their own name. Yeah. And you should do the same. And I was like, But do you not think that's a bit big-headed? And he goes, no. He says, it's timeless. It'll never age. And if you just put your name there, then you'll never look at it going, Jesus, why did I call it that name after 10 years? Xanadu, I think the Corrs were going to call themselves, something dreadful like that. So anyway, that's where you planted the seeds. Yeah. And I was like, I said, maybe we'll call it, and that's why I call it Dillon Bradshaw.
And there's a little twist in the logo as well, isn't there? So describe the logo.
Well, the logo used to be more phallic than it is, if you like, because before I got a really good designer to come in, I kind of nearly did it myself, the DB, right, which was hilarious. So it was much longer without sounding too pervy. So you people used to kind of go, Jesus, it's kind of like a phallic symbol. So we shortened it and made it all a bit more about the size of the DB as opposed to the length of it. So Image Now, or Great Design Crowd, came to me with softened the whole image for me. And it's actually become quite a really well-known brand. It's great, to the point that when you have people like Dublin Bike come opening up in the city center, that people are going, oh my God, they've robbed your, so it's a great, logo, I have to say. And it's funny enough, it's timeless, you know. It hasn't aged at all, which is great.
Yeah. And the scissors as well, hidden in there, which I think
that was it. Yeah, really, that was originally the idea of it, was just the scissors, exactly. Sorry. Yeah. And then we just paired it back a little bit.
Yeah, so it's really, really, really clever. Looks great. And then I love the door handles as well. And so you've got the DB for the door, to let yourself into the building as well. So all nice touches, a lot of...
It was just about, I suppose, at the time when we opened the salon that in South William Street, we were probably 9 years in business. And it was just like, okay, so we're opening this basically space, and I wanted to create it like a little boutique hotel where it wasn't very salon-y feel as you came into it. So that was the whole idea. We just wanted to make it a bit more luxurious and make the brand even stronger, just by, you know, by some of the units that the DB would be in, the units were mounted into. So we have brought our own, you know, tools to market. We brought our own hair care, like brushes and stuff like that. So it was great. It was just the next level for us to do, our makeup range. And just little things like that. We were never there to take over the world. And that's the one thing I would definitely say to anybody. You know, we're not here to like open 20 shops. We've never had any interest in it. I'm just happy to have one big store and that we're a destination space. I don't want to manage, and I don't want to have, you know, hundreds of staff. I just literally happy to have a place that I can call home from home, that I go to work, and that I can control the environment, and that we have a kind of a good space that doesn't dilute the brand in any way, as far as I'm concerned. I think once you start going into other salons or creating other salons, I definitely think you have to look at your brand in a different way. And that's kind of it. And it's funny, like, you know, as you get older, people say to you, I mean, we've been very lucky as a business. You know, I've had big department stores have come to me and said, look, we would love you to set up within our space. And of course, you know, when you're a little bit younger, you're like, yeah, that could be good. That would be great. But then once you start sitting down and you're doing the figures, and then you kind of do like the 7 days a week that these places are open, and you just go, it's not worth it. It's just diluting what I do, and it's going to take the energy away what I do. We've been lucky to have people have offered us to come over to London and open up over there. Again, it's one of those things which is great. But I remember myself and my wife talking about it, going, she was really up for it, you know, said, would it be great? It would be great for the brand. It would be great for the brand. But then you kind of go, I love my family. I love being at home when I come home. And then it's just a trade-off. So you've got to kind of, I suppose, in life, it's that balance. Yeah. You know, what do you want? Do you want to be like the best, you know, at this, which is great, and then suck at this? Or do you want to kind of be just have an equal balance, you know, which I kind of like that, you know. I like the idea that we work hard, but we don't have to work, you know, ridiculously hard. I mean, I do work really hard, but I mean, I don't really want to go working hard somewhere else.
Yeah.
I still want to come home, see the kids, you know, spend time with the missus while she'll have me at the moment, you know.
Yeah. Very good. So obviously then there is a danger of diluting a brand by spreading it too far and, you know, going to different markets and new stores. There is a danger, you know, that the quality goes down. But so obviously when you hire people, then they have to take on your brand and represent you and go to work at your standard. So how, mm-hmm. tell me about hiring good people and holding on to them, and how you manage a team, and how that has evolved over the years.
I think when I was in the original salon, it was a small salon. So there was 15 stations, and there was a team of 25 at the max, you know, and that was great, because it's just kind of like, you know, the beginning of something. It's the birth of something, you know, so people buy into it straight away because they're part of the birth of the product. So that's the exciting time for any brand, as everybody knows. So you've got that 5-year period where people just, and, you know, I suppose you don't take it for granted, but we have won everything, and we have featured in everything from, you know, like all the magazines to the, you know, news and media and all that. And that's great. But that helps people want to come work for you. And it also helps people want to come to experience the brand, if you like, as a service, as a client or a customer. But, you know, it's to keep that energy and that excitement up is difficult. You know, once we opened the new salon, the salon was so much bigger, so we start taking on more team, and that's kind of something that I do regret, that I just should have not gotten too big too quick. Like, that's the problem for a lot of businesses, not because we weren't generating the turnover was phenomenal, but all the shit you had to deal with when you've got 68 staff, yeah. It was just relentless. And I had a manager at the time who was really good with a small staff, but then you're turning it on its head, and suddenly you're controlling, you know, 2,000 services coming through the salon every week. Yeah. You know, and I'm the type of guy, if somebody's unhappy, I'm devastated. Like, why are you unhappy? You know, so, you know, realistically, as the numbers get greater, then you have to really control what you're doing. And I have to say, it was really, really tough. I was doing, because I'm busy, I work full time with my clients, so I do 4 days a week. So I'd manage before and after the business, and I'd manage what I can see on the floor, but I can't stop everything to go to somebody if there's an issue, let's say.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a learning curve. That was something that we kind of go, so we have makeup, we have nails, we have extra beauty services, we have lots more hairdressing going on, and we have much bigger team, bigger wage. And that kind of was really tough. And then to keep people motivated, and then you let a few bad apples in, like in any business, and they start kind of rocking the boat, and, you know, it's kind of difficult. So I suppose in hindsight, I don't regret anything that I do. If I haven't made the worst mistake ever, it's part of your journey of what you do in business. It's not like something that you go, if you keep thinking, oh, destination is success, so then you're leading yourself for failure. So part of the stuff that we do, you kind of go, this isn't working, so we need to like scale it back. Need to offload some dead wood, some people that shouldn't be in the business, that just don't fit what we do. Yeah. And then you can spend the time and concentrate on the guys that who are really up for it. Yeah. But sometimes you let them down because you're too busy trying to put fires out. Yeah. So that's what I have learned in business, I suppose, that you just concentrate on the good guys because they're just so loyal. They work hard and they believe in what you do and they believe in the clients that they're taking care of. Yeah. And that's something that we spent a lot of time in on these past few years, is just, you know, look after the good guys. And if people can't work to what we do, well then just they're not part, they don't fit the brand, you know. Yeah. Same thing as well though, industry has changed so much in the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. You know, people that want to come work and are very, very different than they were 10 years ago. And people's wants and needs are very, very different than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So you have to work very, very differently with people, and you have to handle people very, very differently, I think.
Mm. So that's really interesting. And obviously then you've loads of interactions with clients over the years. Have any kind of interesting or funny stories that that you can share?
I think I'd start with saying though, is that, so, you know, people say to me all the time, like, you know, how do you learn? Like, how do you read books? So I'm dyslexic, so books have never interested me, but I listen to people, you know. I've learned so much in my life about the person that sits in the chair, okay? Because I have the best gift in the world, okay? I get to interview somebody every hour if I want to, or listen. And the most important thing is listening, you know, it's to learn to listen, because you can pick up all this free advice and information. So from people that are, you know, in business, people that, you know, have families, people that have failed at something, that have succeeded in things. And you just pick all these this information up for you that really, really helps, you know, in what you do and decisions that you make in life, on a personal level, in your business level, and so on. So we do have lots of, the great thing about the job, again, is that you look after people and they are, you know, they open up to you in a way. I suppose I'm thinking of a funny story. I was trying to think while I was talking there. I mean, I had a woman years ago, I worked in Peter Mark, and she said to me, she came into reception, and she was a German woman, and I came over to her, and they said, look, this woman's very unhappy. She's just been to a salon down the road. And she said to me, I was just in a Peter Mark salon, okay? And I am so unhappy with my hair. It is awful. I just had my hair colored blonde and they have ruined my hair. So I was like going, okay, yeah, sorry about that, but I can't do anything with your hair until I see your natural color again, your regrowth, right? And she was like, I said, you'll have to come back in about 6 weeks, but I'll happily look after you, but I need to see some sort of growth, see your natural hair. And she goes, okay, fine. So she goes off, give her the card, she comes away, didn't think anything else of it. So I'm up looking after a client one Saturday afternoon, and this salon is heaving, right? People are in reception sitting around, there's bodies everywhere, like trying to get in and get out paid. Next thing, a lady comes up to me, one of their team in front of house says, Dylan, there's a woman here that's really, really pushy, she has to see you now. So I came down to reception and I didn't recognize the lady, and she goes, hello, I was here with you last week and I want to tell you about my hair. Remember, I was unhappy with my blonde. And I was like, oh, Jesus, the accent, remembering. I said, yeah, but I didn't I say to you about not coming back for about 6 weeks? And she goes, 1 minute, please. So I'm standing there in reception, place is heaving, everybody's looking around, and she has this child, she's yanking, says, wait there, I said. She pulls out this envelope and taps an envelope, and all these short curly hair comes out. Where obviously people are looking at this, like reception is on the phone, like wanting to vomit that this woman has shaved or decided to cut her personal belongings and bring them in to show the color of her natural hair. So you get beautiful things like that that happens to you. But yeah, there's lots of fun stuff that happens within the business. It's great.
And maybe mention some of the other, you've worked with the Coors, you worked with
I work with you too for probably 15 years. I've worked with kind of Victoria Beckham. I've worked with, I mean, Hozier. I mean, all the Irish personalities, any of the big personalities that come through. I mean, the same thing. I've looked after supermodels. I've done everything from worked in Vogue. I've done MTV Music Awards all over the world. I've done pretty much everything. I've worked on, you know, like the big US shows as well, looking after people, the Graham Norton shows, that, you know, the Top of the Pops at the time, and all the stuff like that, looking after personalities, celebs, bands. And it's been amazing. I mean, there's lots of great, I mean, I suppose one of the, I've done so many great things, I'm incredibly blessed, but there was a music video I did with U2. I've done many music videos with U2, but there was one of them where City of Lights, it was called, the song, and they shot this video where they started in Harlem on a flat truck. And they were singing the song, right? And only released it to all the media 2 hours before, right? That they were shooting a live video. So there was 3 helicopters, there was 40 cameras in different setups, and they were driving, right? And I was on the flat back truck with them behind the speaker, just me and the band before, right? For like the day, because you're in between takes, you have to look after their grooming and make sure they're all ready to go. And so rather than getting off the truck and whatever. So there's this scene where, and I will never forget it, I was on the truck, right? And we were going through Times Square on this flatback truck, you know? And there's about 40, 50,000 people just all losing their shit, like chasing through the streets, you know? Oh my God, you too! You know, very over the top, freaked out people. And I remember looking at myself going, Jesus Christ, I mean, this is where I started off, you know, sitting on a seat with the manager saying to me, I believe you want to do hairdressing. Yeah. You know, that moment where I could have said no, because I didn't want to work with a load of gay men, that Christian brother mindset, you know? And I was like going, it's been such a gift, you know? Yeah. I've stood, in moments like that. And even funny, I was getting lots of texts the next day with the lads were saying, loads of mates were looking at the Irish papers the next day because they it was on the front cover, and you see it, you see the Bradshaw fella hunkered down and the four lads on the thing. So it's things like that that's fantastic. I love. I mean, I have so many of those type of stories, but you're very, very lucky to at times with that. And I think you have to be aware of that. You have to be grateful for it.
But it did, yeah. So you did obviously did the right thing. You opened up to the opportunity and said, "Oh, I'll take a risk. I'll explore it." And it worked out really, really well. Have you other tips or lessons, or for people that are coming, starting their career early stage and maybe thinking of developing their skills in this industry that you're in or other industries?
I think realistically, you've got to be incredibly dog-headed and strong-minded on what you want to do. Like, I was dyslexic, and I remember I had to go to a guy in business, and he said to me, "You have to do a business plan." Now, that's like saying to, you're going to have to start speaking Russian tomorrow to somebody who's dyslexic. So I actually, I was so embarrassed, I couldn't communicate to him that I can't, physically use a computer. And I hand wrote a business plan, and it killed me. It literally took me 3 or 4 months, and he'd send me up with the next, he said, "This is what you've got to do. Go away and do that." And that nearly killed me. That was the hardest part of the job. Raising the money is easy, right? Finding the premises, getting the architect on board, all that stuff is easy, but actually physically doing that was hard. So once I did that, I was like, I can do pretty much anything in my head. But what I would say to people is, it doesn't matter, whatever it is you want to do, if you're good enough and hardworking enough. I mean, yes, there is breaks, yes, there's luck about it, but luck doesn't, doesn't pay the bills. Luck gets you to a place where you take advantage and you go, okay, now I'm going to make this work for me. I've got this opportunity, so I'm going to work with it. But I don't, of all my life, in those early years, you're told you can't achieve, you're stupid, you're whatever. And I think partly it's just because you have to have that dog belief to kind of go, look, I want to do this. I'll do whatever it takes to do whatever it takes. So I just kind of think you just have to have, a drive. A friend of mine always says that myself and Charlotte, who's a huge part of the business, she does all the kind of the running of the business side of it. It just says, like, we jump off a cliff and build the wings on the way down. And I think that's part of what business is about. You can plan all you want. You write as much documents. You can project all your figures when you go to the banks and they want a 5-year plan and all this stuff that goes with it. But you cannot control what happens, like what's happening at the moment. So the thing is that, you've got to make sure that you don't surround yourself with stupid kind of opportunities that you've spent lots of money that could sink you as a, you've got to just be smart on your spend. And you've got to make sure, what you're doing is right, but also it's not silly.
Okay. And do you think that business education for entrepreneurs, for solopreneurs is suitable?
I do. Better. It's very hard to kind of say to somebody, here's the magic pill. There's no magic pill, because my business, I can get off the phone with you now and I'm going to fail tomorrow and I might never come back from it. That's business. The only problem I would say to anybody is, from an entrepreneurial, it's like this word that gets thrown around too much now, I think, where people go, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. Why? Because I'm self-employed and I'm, well, there's a bit more to that. I think personally, I think realistically, the failure thing has to be stitched into it more. Like, we keep thinking of the word success and, achievements and, arrival at this destination. And there's too much of that where, I can go on to a masterclass and I'm going to listen to a very successful guy because he's banked 6 billion in his bank. And this is the reason why I sold this. My business is really difficult. If I want to be really business minded, I mean, my business will never be a success, because pharma tech margins are massive. You don't employ people, it's machinery. You can think the thing 24 hours a day. You have much better tax benefits. So if you're driven in that sort of way to make money, well, that's the way to go. I do what I love and I get paid for it, and that's the way it is. But I do think to people, if they are in the, doing something where they're employing people, I think you have to enjoy what you're doing, but also be prepared for the failures as well and the falls, just so long as you get to bounce back from it. And don't look at it as ending your life, as in ending your business. it's something that is part of what having a business is.
Yeah, great. And is there any podcasts, because you know you don't read so much, is there any podcasts or videos that you kind of follow?
excuse me, I love listening to people just talking about experience. It doesn't have to be like a clear message at the end of it. I got completely addicted to Desert Island Discs over the lockdown, because it's just personalities, and because I'm in the garden, it just plays back to back, so you don't know who's coming up. So you can listen to an academic and what's floats their boat, and you can listen to a musician, you can listen to an actor, you can listen to a Nobel Peace, you know. It's amazing I love listening to people. I love hearing what makes them tick. Yeah. And success again doesn't mean about, you know, the destination at the end of like, I've made all this money. It's about like, are you happy in your life? Are you happy with what you have? Yeah. And then if business can support that love of your life, your lifestyle, your kind of family life, and your career, and something that you love doing, your job. Yeah. I mean, I'm successful, and that's what I would put it down to be, you know?
Yeah, great. It's been very inspirational to hear your story and how you work, et cetera. Is there any final tips or any final thoughts for wrap up for people out there?
I just say to people just to have faith in themselves. That's it, you know? Because a lot of times people are going to not have faith in you. You know, and you just got to keep having faith. It's something that we kind of bang around a bit, but you just got to believe and keep pushing forward. So if you've got a good idea, or you've got something that you think can make a difference if you bring it to market, even if it's a service or an experience or a product, whatever you do, 9 times out of 10, you're not, you know, lots of people that are successful aren't bringing something brand new to market. They just have a great, it's getting to the people that, you know, they get that product to people, then people want to use it. So that's part of the thing. You can have a great product and not get it to market or not get it to where it needs to be because you've fallen on the first or the second hurdle, but just keep pushing forward. If you really believe in it's the right thing to do. Yeah. But I do always think though, you surround yourself with the right people as well in life. And I think success will come guaranteed. But if you have got people, and that's what happens when we go through life, you might have friends that you had, you know, as kids, but you might outgrow them, not in a bad way, but because they'd be going, well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take that chance. That wouldn't be for me. Yeah. And that's probably not always the people to have around you. So I definitely think have believers and supporters around you, because it will make it work much easier.
Yeah. There's that saying where you become the average of the 4 or 5 people that you spend most time with. So it depends, which is very true, I think.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. And it's good to keep talking. I love like what you're doing now, because I think it's great for people to kind of go, you know, I'm having a really shit time at this. There's other ways to do it. Yeah. It's a bit like education. We're still sending our kids to school and they're still being educated the way they were 100 years ago. But actually, funnily enough, all the kids that are making all the money now are doing completely different. Like I have a child that who loves program, and he's only like 11, and he's quite gifted at it. So I'm putting all his energies into that. Yeah. Because, you know, geography and, you know, history is not going to save his ass in 10, 15 years down the line, you know, and that's the hard facts. Yeah. So I'm going to give him something that he loves, and hopefully that he can build a, you know, something for himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping we'll watch his progress, and I'll continue to watch your progress. Dylan, it's been brilliant to chat to you. You know, thanks a million for being so generous with your time.
Thanks for having me. Cheers. Congrats.
I hope you have a strong end to the year and things clear up and that things move forward well for you into the next year and on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thanks a million. And where do people go to learn more about you?
So we have dylanbradshaw.com is the website for the, and then sure you can catch me on Instagram, as we say, my extremely busy lifestyle at the moment.
Gardening tips.
Yeah, exactly.
pruning hedges, not heads.
Well, no, I can't. I'm literally taking it in my hedges instead of poor people's heads. Exactly.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Connor. Father, cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Bye bye. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. If this is your first time to join us, you are most welcome, and please subscribe for future episodes. This show is shared with you to help you succeed. So please share with others to help them succeed too. At Selfmakers, we believe you can all be your own business. We're here to help self-employed people across the globe accelerate their careers and achieve self-made success. Please visit selfmakers.com and follow Self Makers on social media. Bye for now.